Welcome everyone to this interview, where I'm super excited to be talking with Dr. Isaac Elias. We're going to be talking about his new book, The Survival Paradox, and we'll be talking about the impact of being in a survival response on our capacity for sleep. He'll also walk us through some practical tools to work with this. We'll also get into some of his experiences and insights around meditation and how sleep can be used for more than just physical and emotional restoration. To give you a little bit of Isaac's background, Dr. Isaac Elias is a leading expert in the field of integrative medicine, specializing in cancer, detoxification, immunity, and complex conditions. He is a respected physician, researcher, best-selling author, educator, and mind-body practitioner. Dr. Elias partners with leading research institutes, including Harvard, the National Institute of Health, Columbia, and others, to author studies on integrative therapies for cancer, heavy metal toxicity, and others. He is founder and medical director of Amitabha Medical Clinic in Santa Rosa, California, where he has pioneered the use of therapeutic apheresis as an adjunctive blood filtration treatment for chronic degenerative conditions. So, Isaac, welcome. I'm really happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to be in this important summit.
So you're a physician working with many people with complex disease states. And I'm curious as to, in your view, what are some of the biggest health risks that you see in the people you work with when it comes to poor sleep?
You know, it's not only the problems. Sleep is really essential for health. And the reason is that our life journey is divided into being active, putting out energy, doing things, and then into repair and regeneration. And the repair and regeneration is sleeping. You know, when I was young and I was doing a lot of stuff, I used to feel that sleep is a waste of time. Why should I sleep? And as I aged and got a little wiser, I became to cherishing sleep. So sleep is really a repair and regeneration. And then when the repair and regeneration is disrupted, you know, Alex, we naturally, it's going to affect every chronic disease in our body. And, from cardiac health to blood pressure, to hormonal system, to immunity. And it's really reflected by the research on melatonin, you know, the hormone, the sleep hormone. Look what it does. It's a clear rejuvenation hormone for skin, for endocrinology, for the immune system, for our ability to fight cancer. Why? Because it's an expression of this rejuvenation, regeneration. So when we come from this point of view, we can look at sleep as nourishing us on a physical level. And then in many esoteric traditions, sleep is used to nourish us on a psychological, emotional, and psycho-spiritual level. So, and this is something I make a lot of use in my life, because you may not be able to fit everything into your life activity, but you always sleep. So I use sleep in a very multidimensional way, which usually I don't talk about, but if we have time, I'll a little bit expand on it.
Well, I'm already curious about that. I'm going to hold fire on that a little bit later. Are there certain conditions that are particularly impacted by poor sleep in your experience?
Yes. When we don't sleep well and we don't get the right rejuvenation, which is really a balance, you can look at it from an autonomic nervous system between the sympathetic, active, alert, survival system to the relaxing, rejuvenation, balancing parasympathetic system, we have an additional pressure on the sympathetic system. And one of the main victims of this is the cardiovascular system, the blood pressure system. When we don't sleep well, our blood pressure goes up. Our ability to regulate goes down. And when this happens and we get vascular damage, we pretty much get damage in every single system in the body. So you will get, for example, organ damage, and it will affect every organ, with the key organs affected beyond the heart are the kidneys, which are so sensitive to blood pressure issues, and then the liver and the brain. So once you got all of this, you're pretty much covered with everything. So it's very important to understand this, and then it naturally will affect the hormonal system because we lost the ability to regulate. So it's not only the hormonal, as you know well, the hormonal system is fascinating because it's really the place where matter and time comes together. It's where we regulate our substance, our biochemistry, with time and with movement. That's why endocrinology is so fascinating, and that's why it's tragic that the endocrinologists look at it in such a linear way. And one of the key things, our diurnal variation, for example, cortisol has to go up in the morning when we get active and goes down at night when we want to really relax. Melatonin goes up, the cycle between melatonin and serotonin, etc. So when we lose this, and our hormonal and diurnal variation goes away, the image that is used in Chinese medicine is the image of a rubber band. The rubber band, when it works well, it's flexible. It stretches during the day and it relaxes during the night. So if you keep it at the same tension, eventually the rubber band is going to be damaged and dry out, and it loses its flexibility first. Now, it's not only an image. Losing flexibility means the artery are less flexible, you know. Our ability, right? Blood pressure, we can't regulate. Our ability to regulate our life is less flexible. The connection between output and input, and this is, again, it's not esoteric. That's what happened on a membrane level. The membrane is to know what to put out of the cell to detoxify and what to take in as nourishment. It's, again, activity and sleep. So the way I look at it, it's a taste of my holistic view. That's my understanding of sleep. So sleep is at the key of healing, and from simple supplementation to lifestyle advice that I'm sure a lot of your speakers are talking about, to some more of esoteric system of resetting your biological clock, which are done in the clinic. And all of this, when we can get sleep to improve, the patient is going to get better. And one of the most problematic thing is what happened in intensive care unit. Because in intensive care units, for doctors know it and people who have been there, the light is always on. You know, so people lose the orientation and they get delirium almost immediately. They lose their orientation, and of course it affects their health. So the moment they go into a regular room, they get better. So for example, patient in such a situation, I tell them, look, try to close as much light as you can if there's a family there in a regular hospital room. And during the day, open the window. Let the person see the blue light in the sky. And even this will make people help. So sleep is a master regulation. And it's something we actually have control in setting the environment and supporting our body. And with a deeper understanding, it becomes a powerful tool for healing.
Fantastic. I want to, Isaac, come to some of the ideas in your new book, which was I've been really enjoying dipping into. You talk about the book being called, you talk about the survival paradox and how effectively our biochemical alarm system is often driving disease and ultimately, of course, having an impact on sleep. Can you say a bit about what the survival paradox is, and then let's come into its relationship to sleep?
Yeah, of course, I'll be delighted. So the survival paradox really introduces a new paradigm shift, a new paradigm into understanding of health and disease. We all are aware that inflammation drives every chronic disease, and lack of sleep, by the way, drives inflammation, of course, because there's no good repair, and as a result, affects every system. But inflammation is really not the cause. Inflammation is a result. And it's a result of our inappropriate survival response. And that's a paradox. The paradox is that our drive to survive, which is innate in us from beginning times, you know, we want to survive. And it goes down to every cell in our body. This drive produces either a fighting response through the sympathetic system, that is activated immediately upon any threat, but it's also built into our ego, into our existence. And the fight equates to inflammation, to struggle, to friction, or we run away, we hide. Flight, which is what is created when we hide, when we create fibrosis, when we create microenvironment. And the microenvironments which is really what happens when a cancer cell wants to survive, right? It loses its understanding that it's part of a community, and it creates a microenvironment, a different environment where the body's immune system can get to it, and then it starts to self-regulate. So if we understand this and we understand how we can change the survival response, and one of the key things, there's a specific protein, galectin-3, which I've been researching for close to 30 years, and I've got NIH grants researching it. So when we understand that there is, when we identify this protein, which has about 10,000 published papers, there's a way to block it with modified citrus pectin, with spectosol, and that's my work, again, over 25 years, there are 80 published papers. So it's definitely a very simple biochemical way of addressing the survival response. But from a sleep point of view, what happens is we shift into a sympathetic mode. So when we have lack of sleep and we are overly alert, the sympathetic system is on. And then what happens, and I can share this slide that shows it. And in the slide, you can see that there is a sympathetic pulse on the right diagram, and then you come back to baseline. But over time, you lose the ability to come down to baseline, and you live your life in an ongoing tension, in all on over sympathetic tone. And what it does, it throws off our hormonal system, the insulin, glucagon, cortisol, adrenaline system, and it affects, as we all know, all our metabolism and every chronic disease. So the importance of understanding it, if we can come back to the baseline, if we can let go and come to it, and sometimes it means we have to take time off and kind of shed off. And in one sense, sleep is the solution for it. So if I can give an unusual health tip for people listening. So we talked about the importance of sleep in putting us back into a parasympathetic thought, but something I do every single weekend, and if I don't do it, I pay the price, which allows me to reset, is I do something that I term non-shooting. So I take the middle of the day on the weekend, and I go and take a nap. I go to sleep. We are back to sleep. But it's not a usual sleep. In the sleep, before I fall asleep, I shed off any identity I have. Professional identity, family member identity, anything that relates to my ego, to my identity, I totally drop. And then I go to sleep. No alarm clock. It can be an hour, it can be 2 hours, it can be 3 hours, as long as I can. And then I wake up. And the waking up is very important. So when I wake up and the body wants to come into an alert, right, the sympathetic system will wake up, I kind of start to wake up, and then I fall, totally drop. And when I drop everything. You almost can allow yourself to drop into this deep abyss. You know, even if you feel a little bit depressed in life, you drop into it. But you drop into this very quiet, dark place, not from a point of desperation, but a point of deep letting go. And you do this cycle a few times. You kind of wake up and you drop. And you drop, you'll fall asleep again for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for half an hour, for 2 minutes. And at some point, when you wake up, you feel, wow, you are refreshed. And then you get up. And what it does, Alex, it does multiple peelings of levels that we often can't get to during our night sleep, because it's a deeper way. And then it really changes my health. And people that I teach this, it really, so it's a tip about sleep during the day, once a week. And once a week, you know, because we do have a cycle in, you know, the people have the weekend. So it's really a symbolic of letting go. And the one other reason it's so important, with electronic, with the phone, with messages, right, with emails, we never get time off. So this is 2-3 hours. And the reason why it's so powerful, because we have to survive. So we have learned to survive in an overly sympathetic tone. You know, I always say, if you take a great yogi from the cave, let's say in the Himalayas in Tibet, and you brought them to Wall Street, they would get a heart attack in 5 minutes. They wouldn't be able to handle the sympathetic tone that we can. And this flaw maybe in our modern life, it's also a strength, because we have learned to survive in it, which means 2 hours of letting go will equate to sitting in the cave for 3 months 500 years ago. So that's a very interesting rejuvenation system I wanted to share, because it's not something that usually people talk about. How can you rejuvenate with sleep during the day, you know?
Yeah, I love it. And I do something not dissimilar, but not as elegant as what you described, which quite often looks like on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, watching a movie after lunch with the kids and being like that classic middle-aged dad that falls asleep in the armchair. But the thing that is interesting about it is often I don't realize how tired I am until I let myself properly switch off and have that sleep. Exactly. Because I work hard in the week. I get up early because I have young kids that are up. And so it's almost like there's a kind of deepening, I think, of our ability to rest when we surrender into it, which I think is what you're describing.
Completely. Yeah, that's what happens. So people notice, people go to on vacation, what happens? Often they get sick. They get sick because finally the body can let go. It can allow itself to repair. You know, they feel very tired. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to take all interviews, but I mentioned to you that for 20 years, I would go on a 2 to 3 months meditation retreat in the mountains. So in the first 7, 8 years, I would do it in a group, very harsh conditions, winter time, no heat, very harsh conditions. So I would come to the retreat, and I was definitely the busiest person. You know, people, they're professional retreatants. They move from one retreat to another. Actually, a busy life. I come in. And in the first sessions, and people would scold me, I would have this big mattress. We would all sleep in the same room. And I would just sleep for a few hours. Everybody's meditating and I'm sleeping. Well, during these 6 weeks, everybody would get sick. And I would be the only person who never got sick, but would actually get healthier and healthier. And the reason is I allowed myself to collapse for a few hours when I came in. So that's the same principle. So if we can see sleep in this way, and we can come into sleep in such a deeper understanding, we can get much more out of us.
What's also interesting is, as you're talking, Isaac, I'm thinking about small children and how the more tired they sometimes get, the more difficult it is to get them to rest and sleep. And right. And I, you know, I reflect on it. I sort of slightly tell in jest about falling asleep sometimes on a Sunday afternoon, but I often find I sleep really well that night because I'm actually less wired and less kind of drained, because totally. It's almost the more rested, the easier it is to get that quality of sleep.
Totally. Yeah, definitely. And so again, I don't know if we'll have time to talk about it. It's more of the esoteric preparation for sleep, but there's a certain meditations you do before sleep that prepare you for sleep. So you don't carry some of the daily load into your sleep. So if you have these few minutes of setup, and just by kind of reviewing your day and letting go of whatever happened, you know, rejoicing in anything good you have done, letting go of anything negative, if it affected you, affected others, and just kind of allowing, you know, yourself to relax until the mind opens and relaxes, and ideally in the dark already, then you got what you talked about. In a few minutes, the body is more spacious. We moved into a sympathetic tone when we are still alert. And from this, we just fall asleep. So this is a trick that you do before bedtime.
Yeah, I'd like to open that up a little bit more, actually, because I wanted to talk about how do we prepare our system for sleep. And so you just outlined it very briefly there, but maybe you can say a few more words about the form of how we might approach and do that.
Of course. So I think one thing when we can is the time of sleep. So ideal repair time starts around, you know, 9, 10 p.m., 11 p.m., not later. And in Chinese medicine, the energy comes into the body through the gallbladder and the liver at 11 p.m. So you start earlier, around 10. So it's ideal if we can go to sleep earlier and wake up earlier, it's much, much healthier. And it's in sync with our hormonal cycles. So that's one very important principle. And of course, as a second thing, no electronic stimulation in the room as much as you can. So no TV, no cell phones. If you can minimize Wi-Fi, it's very hard. You know, I'm lucky, I live kind of in nature. The only Wi-Fi we see is our Wi-Fi. So, and again, it's an unusual situation, but as much as we can. And then the room being dark. The room being dark is key. Everybody talks about it, but often it kind of like goes, you know, we don't really listen to it. No, it's just getting a curtain that is dark enough and trying to keep the room dark. It immediately shifts our mind and starts, the pineal gland starts to respond. Melatonin gets disrupted in seconds of light that comes into it. And in this sense also, try to avoid working on computers, using your cell phone for, if you can, for an hour before sleep, definitely for half an hour. And if you need something to keep yourself busy, then reading a book, actually reading a hard copy book, is very different because you're using your eyes. It's more of natural light. There is no radiation coming into it. From a point of view of food, it's good to try to have your last meal about 3 hours before sleep. So your digestion is not active. And so the digestion now is going into a state of rest and the body can follow, with the exception of people who have hypoglycemias. So hypoglycemia is a whole topic that how to kind of, how to transform them and get rid of them. And I know from my own experience, it's doable, it's not very hard, but putting it aside, for people who have such an issue that they get into hypoglycemias, then it's good to have a protein before bedtime, so you can keep, so as the breakdown to sugars is slower, and it will keep you in a steady state. And then from the point of view of preparation, you know, you can sit in bed cross-legged, is your leg straight, you can even lean back, and, you know, and just, you know, just take a few deep breaths. Yeah, and then just, you know, what I do from a spiritual point of view, I just review my day activities and anything that I've done that to help anyone, you know, because it's connected to our heart and our heart regulates sleep. Then I rejoice. Anything that I've done that intentionally or unintentionally hurt anybody, I just let go. Really let go. When you let go, you don't hold what you talked about. Not feel bad about it, but let go. And then you just sit and just meditate for a few seconds, or just breathe. If you want to do visualization, you can see white light coming through the top of your head and washing your whole body. When you exhale, any tension goes out, like it's black, you know, gray color. And then you just bring the white light until you feel that your body is lighter. And then for people who really want to try it, you will sit and then you will feel that you're falling asleep. As they say, if you have problems sleeping, try to meditate, you fall asleep immediately. So you do it. And then when you feel that you're ready to fall asleep, don't go to sleep yet. Stay a few more seconds until you're really tired. And then our mind is clearer. We are holding less of the busyness of the day. And then we go to sleep. The other part that is very important is that make sure that you have a good pillow if you need, that is suitable for your specific neck, because you want to keep the circulation between the body and the brain. And a lot of it is the angle. If you sleep on your side, is the angle of your neck. You know, if it's not straight, if it's not proper, you will block your blood supply, will affect your blood pressure, and will affect your whole hormonal system. So that's another part that is important. It's good for the room to be a bit chilly, so you feel a bit cold, you know, in a chilly environment, in a cool environment, we sleep better. And the other part, if you feel that your body is tensed and you have pains, then take a hot shower. Take a hot shower. It vasodilates the system. It gives a sense of relaxation. The body responds to heat by cooling, you know, right? You put your hand in hot water, you take it out, it always feels cold. So again, it's a cooling sensation. Cooling means the system is slowing down. Less inflammation, less activity, less survival. Everything is slowing down. And then you go to sleep. And it does make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And just returning also, I want to reflect back on the survival paradox piece here as well. That in a sense, what I understand of it is that the very state that the body's going into to try to survive is having the opposite impact. And it's interesting in the context of sleep, where sleep is a state of surrender, right? And so it's the direct opposite of being in that survival response. And so what I'm hearing is that it's finding the different ways to send the message to the overall system that it doesn't need to be in that survival state.
Yeah, totally. It's a very accurate way of saying it. And then what happened in this sense, we start using our sleep for other deep repairs, you know. So for example, you start getting different quality of dreams. Your dreams become like more pleasant, or you start getting some insights during your sleep. Because why? Because we have opened the space into a deeper repair and regeneration that allows us to go deep into our being, right? When we're in a survival mode, we are on the surface, right? We are on the skin. The skin is, right, our protection. The gut is our protection, because what we eat really doesn't belong to our body until we absorb. So all our senses are alert. You know, that's a survival, sympathetic response. If we take it into our sleep, if that's how we go into sleep, yeah, we fall asleep, but a lot of the time is just spent to unwind. If we unwind before we sleep, now the system is more opened. It can process things that are beyond the daily survival. And that's when often we get insight. And for me personally, I know that my sleep insights are very accurate about what to do in life, you know, very accurate, because I'm trained to really go into it. And if people get into it, I know I really didn't plan to talk about it, Alex, but our pre-interview conversation got me going, and I told you I go off topic. for people who are really into it, keep a notebook next to your bed. And if there's a very important insight during the sleep, then you try to remember it. It's going to affect your sleep. Just wake up for a second. Even your eyes closed, you can make a mark. What is the right page with the pen you put in the right page? You open and you just write the insight, you close, and you go back to sleep. And you find it very useful. And this is an exercise, is that now you're using sleep for deeper rejuvenation, for long-term rejuvenation. And so that's an interesting tip, you know, about how to use sleep in a deeper way.
Yeah, because really what you're saying is sleep is more than just a physical repair process or an emotional processing process. There's also a deeper element, in a sense, in terms of access to deeper capacities and deeper wisdom within us.
Right. So again, this is very medical. So for example, in Chinese medicine, and I know I reflected, because I fly a lot, I developed a product for sleep and for jet lag called the EcoSleep. So it has a little bit of melatonin, very little. Why a little bit? Because because I want to keep the physiological effect. People are sensitive to melatonin, like 0.25 milligram. And then it has honokiol, because honokiol, tiny amounts, shifts you from a glutamate active state to a GABA inhibitory state. Very effective. So this is the arrowhead of the formula. But if you look at this formula, you'll see this bunch of Chinese herbs, you know, in addition to a few. And why? Because each of these herbs relate to the sleep process in different internal organs. So how do I nourish the blood? How do I relax the brain? You know, so I use an herb called Shechangpu, grass leaf, sweet flag is the American name, because it calms, it allows the brain to function with less oxygen. I've learned it because I used to go to the Himalayas to treat the famous meditation masters, and they taught me that this is an herb they use for very, very high altitude, you know, for them, like when they go up to like 16, 17,000 feet, which means you function with less oxygen. So it allows the brain to repair oxidative stress when there's not enough oxygen in the brain. So, and then you use certain herbs that relate to the heart and to the digestion. So it's interesting. It's the seed of the lotus, you know, so you have the lotus flower and the stories, you know, about in Buddhism, the Buddha and the lotus flower, but the seed takes the energy back into our heart and also relates to our digestive system. And then you've got certain herbs that relate to the liver and to the large intestine. So how we let go at night, right? When the bile goes, and then you got certain herbs that nourish the blood. So you get blood supplies to the body during the sleep. Then you got some herbs that cool the system and circulates blood everywhere. Danshen, Chinese salvia. So you got this unique formula. You ask what it's doing. I'm using sleep as a repair system. Everything I talked about. So, and this is an example of multi-dimensional thinking, you know, that we talked about galactin 3 and pectosol and repair of galactin 3. We talked about meditation, you know, we talked about psychological work, but then we talk about biochemistry, and then we talk about herbal medicine when herbs symbolizes these. So for me, there is a repair. And what you see, for example, this formula is just an example, EcoSleep. What you see in this formula is that people don't get tolerance to the supplement. They don't need more of it, you know. They can keep the same dose. In fact, over time, you can use less. Why? Because there's ongoing repair. So that's a reflection from the way I work on a personal level of using botanicals. But for me, they don't reflect just an herb that has certain, you know, very linear properties. It reflects a whole multidimensional, holistic understanding, and sleep is it's the essence of it. We have to respect our body, and we have to respect the gift of sleep. Sleep is a gift, and we have a choice, you know, to use it, and we often don't use it, and it's a problem.
Yeah. Well, also, Isaac, what I'm reflecting as you're speaking, that often when people have sleep issues, there's a lot of fixation on just getting sleep. And sometimes that's taking sleep medications, which will knock them out in a sense. But it isn't necessarily a focus on what's meant to be happening during sleep or really enhancing that quality of sleep. And so what I'm really hearing you speak to here is ensuring that we're not just sleeping, but we're really maximizing the effectiveness of that time.
Right, totally. Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, we really look at sleep as, you know, really, for the people listening, you really look at sleep as part of having useful, joyful, wakeful time. It's really the balance. It's not like something we have to do. It's part of the whole picture. And when we look at this in this way, and we realize, you know, Alex, it's the one thing we do more than anything else in our life. You know, we can talk about, you know, our digestive system, how we eat, but, oh, people talk about different topics, but sleep is the thing we do in our life more than anything else. And we don't take the time to really think about it as much.
So you were saying at the start, and we touched on a little bit, that if we had some time towards the end, we might explore a little bit some of the deeper potentials in sleep. And you touched on the idea of making notes of creativity and ideas that come through. But I guess I'm curious as to, particularly as someone yourself who's been a meditator of many decades, of what is the potential of really optimizing sleep? And I guess, put another way, the potential of meeting the world from a place of deeper connection, like deeper connection with ourselves. And in fact, I'm going to put it slightly differently. When we're not living in a survival paradox, and in a sense, we're able to unlock those deeper places, what's the potential of that?
Wow. So I actually sprinkled it during the conversation already when I talked about the preparation and the insight and writing. So if we look at the survival paradox, when we survive, we have a reactive approach, which means things come to us and we react. And the reactivity naturally causes a sympathetic response, causes contraction. So the journey of healing, the journey in our life, in every aspect, is a journey of letting go. So when we are reactive, we come from our head, from our ego, and then it produces a response. Somebody doesn't threaten us, we get upset, or we respond, we think what to do. There's one organ that behaves differently, it's our heart. Every organ in the body, every cell in the body, takes in nourishment and lets go of toxins, right? That's a basic thing, it's a survival. The heart is different. The heart gets the junk from all the body. The junk that comes from our past. When the blood comes to the heart, it left the organs already. So it reflects a past action in the organs, in the cells, right? We may have eaten a certain food at a time when we had a certain trauma that created an effect on a certain cell. And now the cell released it. The molecule broke down. The carbon dioxide came out and it's coming to the heart. The heart accepts from every organ. It doesn't say, I'm going to get blood only from the liver. Kidneys, I don't like you. I'm not going to get blood. The heart embraces everything. In fact, the heart has to get dirty blood. Otherwise, it can't give clean blood. It connects with the universe, with the breath. And that's why the universe is our great healer. The outside, the environment, because our drama is meaningless for the infinite space outside. And then the heart nourishes without discrimination. The aorta is a rigid artery. It gives blood everywhere. It's afterward that we start to wheel, to do wheeling and dealing, contraction and expansion of arteries. And who does the heart nourish itself? First, it nourishes itself. The heart, the first blood when it comes out, go through the coronary arteries to the heart. And the heart nourishes itself as part of nourishing others and in order to nourish others. And another phenomenon of the heart, and interesting, it was never pointed, nobody pointed it, you know, it's like one thing about what I call open heart medicine, what I teach, is that every organ gets nourished and then does its work. The heart finishes its work, it's totally selfless, and only then it nourishes itself. Another difference. So this is a very important process. So when we go to sleep, if we can shift from our head to our heart, when we're not reactive, we are responsive, because what does the heart do? It accepts everything. It connects with the universe and it gives. That's what love and compassion is. No matter how difficult things are, we give. People are not aware that the electromagnetic field of the heart is 100 times bigger than the brain, which means the way we feel in our heart, the energy we send from our heart, is affecting every cell in our body, literally from a physics point of view, but also affecting people around us. That's why, you know, when you give a hug from the heart, you can really feel it. So when we connect to the heart, we can feel this heat going everywhere and we let it go to wherever we want. And then we just relax. We're now bringing our attention to our heart. And then when you close your eyes, then you bring all your mind activities to your heart and you feel that your focus is just in your heart, no longer in your head. It takes practice. And then to a point when you do it, when you are trained, like when I talk to you from my heart. When I think from my heart, I feel it here, you know, but it's because I'm trained, you know. And then when you go to this place and then you fall asleep, now you got the flow of the heart. You know, it's now what I expressed in these herbs, you know, I talked about the heart in the formula. Now the heart is leading the way. And then the insights become much more prevalent and in a deeper way, which I didn't really think I would talk in a summit, but why not? These are modern times. When we let go during daytime, we realize that everything is changeable. You know, the reason why the secret how to transform the survival paradox is by recognizing that everything changes. What is survival is not accepting the things that express themselves have an end, right? Death is the biggest one. So we lost the ability to see that everything changed and we fixate, just like you said, people fixate on sleep. So when we understand it in reality, especially through meditation, then when we sleep, it's easier to start having an experience that things are not as solid, that things are changeable. And then for me personally, as I mentioned in the beginning, because I'm a busy person, I use my sleep as a meditation practice. But again, it's an unusual training. It's not something, you know, it takes many, many years. Now the sleep becomes a spiritual practice, you know. It becomes a rejuvenation practice at some much deeper way. And that's why I reflected it that I say I pay attention to the insight in my sleep. So for me, it's a little bit deeper. You know, I can get sometimes insights about things that haven't happened yet. But I always pay attention to it because I know I train myself for using sleep because I recognize earlier in life I'm a busy person. Let me use my sleep in a wise way, you know. That's why I'm so happy I got to talk on this summit, because as you can see, I'm sure I'm not your typical speaker on sleep, you know. It's like I look at sleep as a really multidimensional aspect, you know, and in the way I use it, in the way I work with my patient, in the way I teach it in my meditation and healing retreats.
Fascinating. Isaac, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, obviously I want to recommend your book, The Survival Paradox, but tell us where people can go online to find out more and some of what they can find.
Right. So people, you know, can go to the survivalparadox.com. They can go to drelias.org or .com. And what they will find is really this multidimensional education, very practical. I got a very high quality weekly newsletter where I provide the updated research abstracts, and I provide some practical and important education, and connected some of the unique supplements I developed, Pectosol being the leading one, and to my work. And I plan going into 2023 to start teaching more meditation and healing. It's my passion because it's something that is free. Everybody can do it, and it's needed in this world. So yeah, I know I'm now in my 60s. I've done a lot in my life, and I feel it's time for me to really share my heart, these decades of information. That's why until about a few months ago, I really was kind of in my world, and now I'm sharing it, and I'm talking in dozens of summits, because I do think, you know, that these decades of deep training, you know, I've learned some insights, and I feel it's my responsibility to share them with others as much as I can. You know?
That's beautiful. Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.